This is the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President, Tony Perkins.
Hello and welcome to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. A surprise issue in last week's GOP presidential primary debate has arguably had more impact on the presidential primary to date than any other issue. What is the issue? Well, Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin is here with the answer. And Missouri Congresswoman Vicki Hartzler joins me to talk about the why and how of Christians running for office. That's coming up here on the weekend edition of Washington Watch. Let me encourage you to visit the website, tonyperkins.com. You can find out more about all of today's topics. You can also sign up for my daily update, which is right there on the website, tonyperkins.com. And if you're on Twitter, you can keep up with me at T. Perkins. All right, as I mentioned, in last weekend's GOP presidential primary debate, a surprise issue came up when Senator Marco Rubio was asked a question. Now, I want you to listen to this, and then we're going to talk about it.
I want to move on to the military. Senator Rubio, all restrictions on women in combat have been lifted as long as they qualify, positions including special operations forces like Navy SEALs. Just this week, the military leaders of the Army and Marine Corps said that they believe young women, just as young men are required to do, should sign up for selective service in case the draft is reinstated. Many of you have young daughters. Senator Rubio, should young women be required to sign up for selective service in case of a national emergency?
Well, first, let me say there are already women today serving in roles that are like combat, that in fact whose lives are in very serious danger. And so I have no problem whatsoever with people of either gender serving in combat, so long as the minimum requirements necessary to do the job are not compromised. But I support that. And obviously, if now that that is the case, I do believe that selective service should be opened up for both men and women in case a draft is ever instituted.
Well, joining me now to talk about this is FRC's Executive Vice President, retired Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin. General, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you very much, Tony. Glad to be with you.
All right. Senator Rubio was not the only one to endorse the idea of forcing women to register for the draft, for selective service. Also, we had Governor Jeb Bush and Governor Chris Christie weighing in on that as well. I mean, this is something we expect from the Obama administration that has been all about social experimentation in our military. But is this something we expect from conservatives?
Yeah, you know, Tony, I don't know if those candidates were taken by surprise on the question or whether they have actually thought through this, but it is so counter to what I believe to be an American ethos or the American culture that we would involuntarily send our daughters off to war in a foreign land. I just don't believe that their answer is the right answer in terms of military readiness, but more importantly, based on our societal norms.
Now, only one GOP presidential candidate by the week's end had made a statement in opposition to this, and it was Senator Ted Cruz who made it a statement of opposition the following day. And I don't have it on audio, but I have his quote. I want to read it. He said, quote, "It was striking that three different people on that stage came out in support of drafting women into combat in the military." Now, he said this at a town hall meeting the following day on Sunday. Continuing the quote, "I didn't have an opportunity to respond to that particular question, but I have to admit, as I was sitting there listening to that conversation, my reaction was, are you guys nuts? Listen, we've had enough with political correctness, especially in the military. Political correctness is dangerous. And the idea that we would draft our daughters to forcibly bring them into the military and put them in combat, I think is wrong. It is immoral. And if I am president, we ain't doing it," end quote. This issue is really being driven by the Obama administration in putting women into frontline combat units. And once they go down this path and they want to treat everybody equally, is this not the outcome?
Yeah, and you and I have both said that on this program, as a matter of fact, back before the decision was made on the 3rd of December of 2015 when Ash Carter said he had lifted all restrictions on women in the military, and they could serve in any roles to include infantry units and special operations units. Well, you and I have been talking about this for probably the better part of a year, that the next consequence would be that women would have to register for selective service. And that's where we are. I'm glad to hear Senator Cruz oppose this. But the real issue is what brought this about? What brought us to the point that we felt that out of some sense of fairness that women should be forced to register for selective service? And what brought it about was the social experiment of allowing women to serve in these units that had been previously they had been excluded from, or they'd been restricted from serving in these things. And I think Senator Cruz's message there was certainly the way I feel, and I think the way a lot of Americans feel.
Well, speaking of that, Rasmussen conducted a poll this week and released the results midweek. And it showed that less than a majority of Americans actually supported forcing women to register for the draft. And a majority, 52% of women, actually opposed the idea of requiring them to register for the draft. Now, I want to go back to a couple of issues that have come up this week as people have discussed this, one of which actually came up in the debate when former Governor Bush was asked about this, because when he was pressed. Because I think the moderators were surprised that these Republican candidates so willingly embraced this idea that they pressed further. And one of the moderators said to Governor Bush, "Are you saying that you would do away with the prohibition of women registering for the draft?" And the governor said, "No, I didn't say that. You asked a question not about the draft. You're asking about registering." And there's some idea that's being floated out here that simply registering for selective service has nothing to do with the draft. I mean, that's the whole reason for having selective service, is when a draft is instituted, you are drafted into the military. And once you're drafted, you don't have a choice as to where you go.
Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right. You know, you can put in your preference sheet, but you are not guaranteed that you're going to serve in the kind of unit you want to serve in. And remember, the draft was initially instituted in 1917, leading up to World War I, when we knew that our military was way too small to have an expeditionary force to go to Europe and fight against the Germans and their allies. And then there was a challenge to this exclusion of women not being able to or not having to register for selective service. Back in the 80s, and in fact, it was upheld by the courts. In fact, it was upheld by the Supreme Court that women could be excluded from registration for selective service because all jobs in the military were not open to them. So when we lifted this combat exclusion, is what it's called in the military, we then set ourselves up for exactly what we're having this debate about today.
And just so we're very clear here, when you made this, but I want people at home to and driving in their cars to clearly hear this, that when a woman is drafted, now I know that some of the candidates are trying to massage their answers on this, but when someone is drafted into the military in a time of national crisis, which is the only reason we'd have the draft, they can't say, "Well, you know what? I want to be a cook, or I want to be a clerk. I really don't want to be in the infantry." You know, the military will assign them where they want them. And if women are being put in frontline combat units, that's where your daughters, that's where your wife, that's where your sister could end up.
That's exactly right. And remember that the infantry is the largest branch in the Army and the Marine Corps, the infantry. That's what the Army is all about. Just about everything else, in fact, I can say everything else in the Army is designed to support that infantry soldier down there, to include tanks and armor. And it's all about the infantry. Therefore, when you have a situation that requires that we start drafting, you're talking about filling the ranks of the infantry first. That's where the priority is, because you don't seize and hold terrain without ground troops, and that's what the infantry does.
You're listening to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. My guest, Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, a familiar voice here. He's the Executive Vice President of the Family Research Council and a great source of information and knowledge. And I want to transition, because another one of the issues that has been brought up in defense of this idea of drafting women into the military is the issue of Israel and their military, where people have said, well, you know, Israel, they draft women, they require all men and women to serve in the nation's military. And some have said, well, they have women in combat units, and so it works there, and it should work for us. But you say not so fast.
No, listen, there is no comparison. The military of the United States is an expeditionary military. We expect our police and law enforcement to protect us inside our own borders, and then we have the Guard and Reserves if there was some attack. But our main, you know, our active duty military is expeditionary. It fights on foreign soil. Israelis don't do that, except for an incursion in the early 80s into Lebanon, which is on their border, by the way, and another one in 2006. They've never left the borders of their own country. They fight to defend the homeland. So when you're assigned to a brigade in the Israeli Defense Force, you're assigned to a brigade in most cases that's close to your home. And you go home at night. Most people, unless they're on alert, unless they're involved in actual combat, those people go home at night and then come back to work the next day at the base where they are assigned. And when they do go to war, they're fighting literally for their homes and their families. In addition to national sovereignty, they're fighting on their own turf for their homes and their families.
Big difference. They're not looking at being deployed Afghanistan or some other place in the world.
That's right. Hey, by the way, Tony, and they're not in the infantry and the armor. In fact, in 2015, they did another survey in the IDF to determine whether they could put women in tanks, and they decided once again they weren't going to put them in tanks and armor units. They don't serve in the infantry as infantrymen. The women assigned to the infantry there are assigned in administrative jobs. And so there is such a myth about what the Israeli Defense Force is all about. I've lived with them. I've operated with them. I know how they operate.
You were attached to the IDF during your time in the Army, right?
Yes, I was in the Golani Brigade up in Akko. And yes, I understand how they are structured and understand how they operate. So there's so much of a myth about this. Using that as an example or a model for what the United States should do is so ill-informed that it's almost ludicrous.
One final question for you, General. We're just about out of time, but I think you share my concern is that we expect this. We've come to expect it, unfortunately, from this administration, this social engineering in our military. But the fact that Republicans would acquiesce and fall in line with this is what's so troubling, because in my opinion, we've got to have the next commander-in-chief has got to be willing to undo a lot of what has been done to our nation's military if we're going to uphold national defense.
Tony, I agree with you, and I think that what we're talking about right now is one of the first things that he needs to do to restore military readiness. I you know, there was a survey recently, and I was talking today in a meeting I was in with Elaine Donnelly from the Center for Military Readiness, and she was talking about a survey that was done of women in the military, and 92% of them surveyed did not want to be in the infantry. What that means is that if we allow this selective service registration to go forward, we're going to force women into a place that they don't want to be. And that is just runs counter to everything that I believe as a man and as an American.
I could not agree more. General Jerry Boykin, as always, thanks so much for joining us. Glad to have you along with us on this weekend edition.
Thank you, Tony.
All right, folks, you're listening to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. That was Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin. To find out more, go to the website, tonyperkins.com. He's actually written some things on this issue. There's a petition on the website that we're sending to all the presidential candidates to say, don't draft our daughters. You can find that at tonyperkins.com. All right, when we come back, we're going to be joined by Congresswoman Vicki Hartzler to talk about her book, Running God's Way. Don't go away. We're back right after this with more.
We've all heard the saying, the family that prays together stays together. But did you know that social science research actually supports this statement? Here at FRC, the Marriage and Religion Research Institute, or MARRI, shows that families benefit from religious attendance in areas such as education, health, and personal relationships. To learn more about the positive impact religion has on society, visit our website at marri.us.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along this weekend. The website is tonyperkins.com. You can find out more about today's guest, our topics. You can also sign up for my daily update right there on the website. And if you've not yet picked up your copy of No Fear, you can do that as well. All right, speaking of books, I want to talk to you about another book that I didn't write, but I did endorse because I think it's a very important book. It has, let me just say this, it's a subject matter that's near and dear to my heart. And that is, it's encouraging you, Christians across this country, to not just sit on the sidelines and talk about what's happening in our country, but to actually get into the arena, get on the field and make a difference. The author of the book is actually put it into practice. She serves as the congresswoman from the 4th Congressional District of Missouri, Congresswoman Vicki Hartzler. Congresswoman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. Thanks for having me.
The name of the book is Running God's Way, and it's not just a theoretical book. It's something you've actually put into practice.
Well, absolutely. I was a teacher grading papers one night about 20 years ago, and the phone rang, and it was a man I'd known since I was a little girl, and he asked me a very stunning question. He asked me to consider running for state representative, and my first reaction is, I can't do that. I don't know anything about running for office, and it cost a lot of money, and we're just, my husband's a farmer, and I'm a teacher, and we don't have a lot of money, and plus that politics is dirty business. I don't want to do that. And he said, well, would you think about it? Would you pray about it? And that's a very important question I think we should be asking more people. And I said, okay, I'll pray about it. And after I had done that, and my husband, after 30 days, we just felt convicted that I was supposed to run. And we ended up running, and I won in a district which hadn't gone in my political party's way my whole life except one time. And I realized God gave me a ministry, according to Romans 13, the ministry of public service. Because In that chapter, it talks about that he is God's minister to do you good, and he's also a minister of God's wrath to punish the wrongdoer. And I think that's the basic mission of people, Christians running in office, to do people good and to protect them from harm. And it's laid out right there in the Bible. I served 6 years in the Missouri House. I believe the same time you were serving down in Louisiana, Tony, and now I'm in Congress. And in between then, I did go back home, be a full-time mom for a while, and the Lord laid this idea on my heart to write this book to equip and encourage Christians to run for office at all levels, because I realize too many times we get into the election booth on election day, and there's nobody on the ballot who shares our views and values.
Right.
We may have had voter registration drives and got Christians registered. We may have encouraged them to get out the vote, yet there's no one on there who's running who upholds their values. So we need to back up our vision and encourage people to run for school board, for county office, city council, state rep, Congress, and yes, president. We need people all over to uphold those foundational values that our founding fathers established our country on.
You're listening to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. My guest, Congresswoman Vicki Hartzler of Missouri, talking about her book, Running God's Way. To find out about how you can get a copy, go to tonyperkins.com and follow the links over. I highly recommend it. Whether or not you are going to run for office, you should certainly consider it. But someone else you know may need a copy of this, but it talks about our responsibility as Christians. And Vicki, I remember in that first run when you ran for Congress, I spent a day on the campaign trail with you when I was campaigning with then Congressman Roy Blunt, who's now senator. He was running for senator. And, you know, you're passionate about these things, and you've been living out these values, and there is a way to do this that is God-honoring.
Well, there is, and it's amazing. The Bible is the source for all information and for our life, not only a plan of salvation, but also how to have a good marriage, how to run a business. And yes, there are steps in there, and there are verses that tell us how to run for office. It's amazing. So how to give a speech, and we have chapters and everything there, from how to make a campaign plan to how to have volunteers, go door-to-door, handle debates, and give a speech, social media. And many of these things are found right in the Bible. So this book incorporates the wisdom that's in God's Word with just the practical day-to-day how to get things done. And it has examples in the back of direct mail pieces, pushcards, newspaper ads, things that people can use and just take and run with it. And I've had several people read the book over the years and tell me it's been very helpful. And that's what I want, something very practical, easy to use, that somebody can take and either use themselves or give to somebody that they know and encourage them, like Bill did, that elderly man that called me. He took 5 minutes to care, and he said, "Vicki, will you run? And if you do, I'll support you." And that meant the world, and we need to do more of that in the Christian community and change our whole nation. We really can.
The title of the book is Running God's Way. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com, and follow the links over. You know, Vicki, it's actually, having been involved in campaigns all the way from city council to the presidency of the United States, you know, you get into running for president, pretty complicated. It's a little difficult. However, when you're running for the city council, even state legislative seats, if you know what you're doing, it's actually pretty easy to run a successful campaign.
It is. It's not as daunting as people think. I mean, this book pretty much lays out everything you need to know. But if you follow, you know, some of the examples in the Bible, like Nehemiah, when he built the wall, who did he use for his volunteers? And he lays out, there's small businessmen, he had families, he had other leaders from nearby villages help. And you do the same thing. Just follow that model. Reach out to people you know and ask them to help. You know, there's examples of how to give a speech where you lay out the problem and then you say the solution. Basically, here's what I would do if I was elected. Some of those things are in the Bible, and it's really not that hard to run God's way if you just follow what He says and pray. And the Lord can use you if you're willing to be used by Him.
Congresswoman, let me take you back for a moment. I want to put this in a very practical setting for people. When you first made that run for office, what was the biggest challenge you faced?
I think just getting over the fear that I don't know what I'm doing, and surely I can't. It is a step of faith, but God is faithful. I did go to a couple campaign schools, you know, you learn how to do that. I put it all in the book, but I think fundraising, you know, is always difficult, but there's some principles where you are asking people to invest in your cause. You're not asking people to contribute to you, and I never say the word donation, and I advise, don't ask, will you donate to me? That sounds like you're a charity. You're asking them to partner with you in what God wants to do through you for your community or your nation. This isn't about you. This is about what God wants to do in your local school district or city council or whatever. And invite them to partner with you.
Yeah.
And when you view it that way, it's not hard. People are investing in their future for their kids and for their community. So these are some practical things we talk about in the book.
That's a great point. And I learned that myself when I was fundraising when I was in office, is that, you know, it's not about asking people to give you money. It's about them being a part of impacting the world around them. You're just the messenger. They're providing the means by which the message can be carried. And that's every campaign needs money. And to your point about the fear of the unknown, that's, I think, what keeps a lot of people from taking that first step out, is that they just don't know. And that's why running God's way is so helpful, is that it takes the unknown away and it provides them clear insight and understanding of what it takes to run a campaign.
And, you know, it can be fun. It really turned out to be fun, even going door to door, which I was scared to do at first. Of course, I'm a woman, and I went by myself for a while. I don't know if I'd advise that. Everybody has to, in their own community, make that decision. But I did, and, you know, it ended up being a blessing. I didn't know if God's will was for me to win. I just felt led to run, and I thought, I'm going to use this as an opportunity to minister to people.
Yeah.
So I prayed as I went down the street, and I go up to the door, and I was amazed how many times the Lord gave me ministry opportunities, even during the campaign,
yeah,
to encourage someone.
I remember that myself. That was a real joy, and it's one of the things you rarely have time in life to do, where you take time just to sit down and talk with people, total strangers. And there's nothing like it. Is just you. I mean, that's what you do. You just focus on going to meet people, talk to people, drink coffee, sit down, drink some iced tea. And yeah, absolutely. I recall a number of times of just people unloading their burdens, and you just pray with them right there. I mean, what
yep.
other means would you have to do that kind of ministry? So it's all in how you approach this calling to be in government.
Mm-hmm. It really is, and it's a joy, and God will use you as you're obedient. And as I went door to door, you do get a good feel for your district. You get a feel for their needs of the people, what their problems are, what the strengths are. And God expands your heart and gives you a heart
yes.
for your district. And that's the most important thing for public service, is just like Nehemiah, when he heard about the people and the walls going down in Jerusalem, people being in disgrace, he cried. That he cared, and you have to care for the people in your district, and God gives you that heart. He expands your territory like the prayer of Jabez, and then he gives you that honor of serving the good people in that area that he cares about far more than you, and you're just a vessel to be used to serve them and to help them.
Yeah, it's one of the most rewarding things I've ever done. Congresswoman Vicki Hartzler, thanks so much for joining us this weekend.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Tony. Appreciate it.
All right, folks, the name of the book, Running God's Way. You can pick up a copy. Go to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links over. Well, we're out of time for today, and I want to thank you for being with us this weekend. To find out more about our daily program, go to TonyPerkins.com and find a station near you that broadcasts our daily program 5 to 6 p.m. Eastern Time every day. All right, until next time, I leave you once again with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul, found in Ephesians chapter 6, where he says, when you've done everything that you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
The weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you've heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can help support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234.